is more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show,
presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, a passionate show that lets you know how to take control of your genes so you can live at the top of your curve till very near the end. We have someone who's actually been involved in learning from another group, that is from Cuba, Dr. Mark Resnick, who is the professor of physiology and biophysics and psychiatry and director of the biomedical neuroscience training program at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, has been traveling to Cuba to learn what they have and teach them some of what we have. Dr. Resnick, biomedical researcher and a neuroscientist, how did you get possibly involved in this stuff with Cuba?
Well, I think it was 20 years ago now. Our university had sponsored a delegation to go to Cuba, and they had asked me to go with. The group was basically clinicians, and they had asked us to send our CVs ahead of time. And I, when they saw mine, they asked if I would come and give lectures, so that I was kind of broken off from the group. But what it turns out is the two brothers that run the Cuban Neuroscience Center are Chicago natives. They lived here until they were 11. That's Peter and Mitchell Valdez Sosa. And they said to me, when they went to the beach at Varo, he said, why don't you stay with us? You know, learn about us and let's get to know one another. And that really was the start of this. We've put on 3 meetings since then, actually 4, and we've been able to really learn about one another and try and move forward with some limited collaboration, limited, of course, by the embargo.
So it was really friendship that started this, and we ought to talk a little bit about the embargo. I had some relatives who were in Havana in 1956, and they said the medicine, the quality of life there was as advanced or more advanced than it was in Miami, Florida, where some of the rest of their family lived. And then all of a sudden, whatever happened, happened. And if you will, the medicine there, I suppose, because of the financial restrictions, they had to learn to practice a less expensive form of medicine.
I think that's a trenchant comment. They did have to learn to practice a less expensive form of medicine. I'm not sure how much less effective it is. Certainly, things are rustic. If you went to the hospital, you'd probably need to bring your own sheets. Otherwise, you'd be staying on a lawn chair that was taken from one of the large hotels. However, the sophistication of the docs is pretty decent. And one of the wonderful things is that since there are so many primary care doctors there, there's very good records. And people have records that dating back to birth, and they're quite complete, so that each patient could be understood on a better level than a lot of people here, especially those who are elderly.
Now, what I learned in listening to travel messages and Airbnb is, in fact, there are something like 3 million Americans are traveling to Cuba this year because they want to see it in the old state before McDonald's and everybody else comes in. But there's a difficulty of hotel rooms. Is this increase in tourism leading to a increased ability to import and export medical, what I would call devices and information from them, or is there still a relative embargo on that?
Well, as long as we have the embargo, no, we really can't bring in compounds. I know that I do psychopharmacology, and I remember one of the psychiatrists said to me, well, in Cuba, we don't have psychopharmacology. We have psychopharmacology because we have 5 drugs. That's gotten a little better. They didn't even have SSRIs until the patent started expiring and they could start making them. They haven't been able to really work with many of the international companies because they have at least strong presence in the U.S., and if you have a strong presence in the U.S., you can't really do business with Cuba. They tried to get an MRI machine years ago, and were not able to get one, even from the European companies, because they felt that would violate the embargo. They actually made their own, with it's a 0.15 Tesla machine run by two PCs hooked together. And they had two, one in Havana and one in Santiago. They did recently just get one from the Netherlands, a full three-team machine that they can do functional in Orion. But that was just, that just happened.
So three Tesla.
Three Tesla, yeah. So the kind of power that you need in order to do functional imaging. Okay, but they just got it in last September. They inaugurated the new neuroscience center with this machine.
But they've also had in neuroscience, as I read what you've done in the American Association of Scientists, the AAS, they've also done some very good work with lower cost medicine and with vaccines. Can you help us understand that?
Absolutely. But one of the things that would be wonderful if we could bring here is a compound called Heberprot-P, H-E-B-E-R-P-R-O-T-P. And that's a recombinant or a bacterial-produced epidermal growth factor. And what they do with the epidermal growth factor is inject it into wounds. And they've been able to significantly reduce the number of amputations due to diabetic, to wounds in diabetics that won't heal, and also been able to heal bed sores in a lot of the elderly that just can't move and have these sores that are persistent and very nasty. So epidermal, which
implies the surface layers of our body or the epidermis and of other tissues, of course, that growth factor seems to be a magic that Cuba has discovered and developed and is able to be used to help healing. Is that what I understand?
That's absolutely correct. They inject it directly into the wound, and they're able to get significant healing where, as you know, with diabetics, that's extremely difficult and often leads to amputation. So that would be
You're involved in neuroscience program, so there must be something relating to neuroscience that is relatively unique and wonderful there compared to here, because I understand you're very interested in a couple of things. So can you talk to us about those neuroscience advances?
Absolutely. One of the things that they've really excelled in is brain mapping. In fact, they are world class in this regard. And what they do, what they've been able to do, is use electroencephalography, which is very low-cost technology, maybe $10,000 for a machine. And they manufacture the machines themselves, which are sold everywhere in the world except the U.S. And what they do with these images that are collected, if you could imagine wearing a bathing cap with 128 electrodes on it, you would be sitting with a bathing cap and asked to do certain things. And basically, the brain waves are collected at the surface of the brain. So it's completely non-invasive technology. They take the information that they got from reading these brain waves and then are able to feed it into a computer and develop a map for the activity of the brain and or the disruptions of activity of the brain. So one of the things that would be great for in rural America is to be able to look at a patient using this low-cost technology, send the information to a center where they can have a more sophisticated diagnosis, and then decide whether someone can be treated there or needs to be transported. And that would be, and certainly that would be a great boon for us if we would be willing to work with them to develop this.
Now, we have a question from one of our listeners. What about cancer? Is there differences in cancer rates between, for example, Cuba and us? And when we come back, that's the question we'll cover, because we're going to a hard break with some of our sponsors. So I hope people stay tuned. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the changes in cancer rates on You, the Owner's Man, a radio show on Radio MD. Stay tuned.
D. Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike Roizen. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. As the announcer said, a passionate show that helps you take control of your genes. We're talking with Dr. Mark Resnick, a professor of physiology and biophysics and psychiatry at the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago, and a leader in our scientific exchanges with Cuba and in learning about Cuban medicine and what they've been able to do in a restricted economic area and doing very good work. Now, Professor Resnick, tell us about what's been done in cancer, because I think they've done something quite remarkable. Is that right?
Well, they certainly have some interesting things that they've been moving in, and right now there has been an agreement announced between the Roswell Park Cancer Center in Buffalo and the Center for Molecular Immunology, where they develop cancer vaccines. So, before break, we mentioned cancer rates. They're not that different in the U.S. and Cuba. We have a little over 300 per 100,000. They have a little over 200 per 100,000. I'm not sure what that means and what that's due to. The relative life expectancy is about comparable in both countries. Their infant mortality is a little better than us. Let's talk about cancer, though. The cancer vaccines are something that the Cubans have been working on for a long time. How effective are they? Well, I have a colleague who was with an advanced lung cancer who was being treated at the University of Chicago. And he was told by his doctor there that he should try the vaccine. They had a trial there, but he couldn't guarantee that he wouldn't be in the control group. So his doctor actually suggested that he go to Cuba and get the vaccine. Unfortunately, he died. What I guess it's going to be up to, you said something about taking control of your genes, is that when we finally figure out who it is and which cancers will respond best to the vaccine, then we'll be in good shape, and the Cubans will be in great shape because they've been working on it for a long time. But that's
now,
really
what
an advantage
is, what is What's the advantage they have in vaccines? Why did they develop these? What did they see in them? And how did they develop them differently than what we're trying to do?
Well, they've been working on it for a lot longer. They've been working on other things involving the immune system for a lot longer, too. When I was a postdoctoral fellow, I remember interferon was the rage, and this was in the late 70s and early 80s. Everyone kind of dropped it. The Cubans kept working with it. In fact, one of the very interesting things that the Cubans have done in terms of science and scientific research is that during the heart of what they called the special period, the collapse of the Soviet Union, they continued to put the meager funds they had into doing research. And it was claimed that if they didn't, this is something that Fidel himself had said, was if they didn't do research, they would never, if they stopped doing research, they would lag behind and never catch up. So even though they didn't have money for toilet paper, they had money for EEG recordings in the lab that they had the paper for that, and then they would recycle it. And I think this is an important choice that they've made that allowed them to maintain a certain amount of quality. Why did they go in the direction of vaccines? Well, remember, vaccines aren't that expensive, okay? So that for a lot of pharma, it really, the payoff isn't there, okay? And that's not something that motivates the Cuban system.
Now, one of the things that is interesting is there's still, I think in what you told me is there still is a problem in collaborating with Cuba in that we still have an embargo on. Can you talk to that and what we can do to help, what our listeners can do to help get rid of that?
Absolutely. So that the president has done pretty much all that he can to facilitate travel. I think you could do a little more on really ending the travel ban, but we still are limited in the amount of money we can spend and transfer. And we're limited by statute. In other words, this is Congress. This is not the president. And if Congress, it would behoove, I think, all of America, as well as the Cubans, to lift the embargo completely and allow us to spend money there and allow us to do kind of collaboration, to allow pharma to come in and do clinical trials in a place that where we have a population that looks kind of like the U.S., or everyone is black, white, or somewhere in between, and have great medical records. I mean, we could learn a lot by being able to do clinical trials in a place where we really know a lot about the people and would be able to select appropriately for trials. We could learn a lot by doing science together, by doing all kinds of things where we have mutual interest. Cancer vaccines might be one of them. I'm not talking about just clinical development, but the preclinical work that we could do if we join forces. But we can't do that unless we can begin to spend money there, and we can't spend money there unless we end the embargo. We tried to get a 3T machine. An American university was willing to donate one, and we were going to try and get it to the Cubans so that they could do research with it. But we were prohibited, but we couldn't get a license to send it there, because it could be used for some, they said it could be weaponized. Now, I don't know how a magnetic, an MRI machine could be weaponized unless you dropped it on somebody, but
we should say it is very heavy.
Yes, that was the tenor of the embargo. We were really working with a system that just doesn't allow that to happen. And even now, when we try, and I think there's a general, there's a general understanding on the part of the American people that it would be a good thing to end the embargo, and that it would be good for us and good for them. But we can't. We have to move forward, and it's not a partisan issue. I mean, certainly, conservative legislatures from agricultural states could see a great benefit in sending crops to the Cubans to use for food. I mean, we have a surplus. Why not get some money from it?
So the embargo is as I understand, a congressional problem that we have to overcome.
Yes, the final mail.
So the message is we have to write our Congress, our senators, and Congress, and our representatives.
Yes, and say let's get rid of this thing. It's archaic. It doesn't exist anywhere in the world, and these people really aren't our enemy.
And you clearly have brought forth a lot of interesting information and science to us. So I want to thank you for speaking so strongly about the benefits of this collaboration. Hopefully you're going to be continuing it and continue to bring more information. I hope you'll come back on the show and talk to us more about the vaccines as their development expands. And even some about epidermal growth factor as it comes to the United States. Thanks very much, Dr. Mark Resnick, professor at the University of Illinois. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual on Radio MD. Stay well.